Blog Talk Radio.
Please leave your message for
Calvin Russell Jr.
Welcome to Make Sense with Mental Leap, the show that places power in your hands and information for your mind. Let others leave small lines, but not you. Let others place their future in someone else's hands. But if you listen to the show, you'll make sure it's not you. We'll provide you with the keys, but it's up to you to unlock the door.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to Make Sense. Today, we're going to be discussing strategies for building wealth and boosting your credit in 2017. And I was checking a list of the top New Year's resolutions. And number 3 is building wealth. And number 11, actually, is boosting credit. But those actually go hand in hand. So I have an individual with me today from Go Simply Pro. He does credit consultation. We're just going to go ahead and get into it. My man, Calvin Russell Jr. Calvin, how you doing today, man?
Sorry about that. I'm doing awesome. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you. You're good. So go ahead and tell those in the listening audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, first off, I want to thank you so much for having me on this evening's call. I know that, you know, with your network and your influence, you could have pretty much handpicked anybody, you know, to do, you know, a call like this or, you know, a teaching like this where we can kind of share information, you know, to the public. So I appreciate you even choosing me for being on the call. But pretty much who I am and what I do, I am the CEO and founder of Go Simply Pro Credit Consultation. And pretty much what we do, we help people not only improve their credit scores, but we take them a step beyond. We actually help them do something with that score. A lot of times people have the wrong credit cards, so we help them figure that situation out. A lot of times we help them lower their car payments because they don't. A lot of my clients don't understand interest, you know, in terms. And then I make sure we figure that situation out. We teach them about equity and negative equity and being upside down and trade when the best time to trade the car in. And then, of course, ultimately, as you alluded to earlier, you know, buying a home. And a lot of times, you know, we'd help them decide between buying a home and buying an income property. And we've been doing that since 2012, and I love what I do, man, and here I am today.
That's beautiful. So real quick, before we get deep into it, share the story of how you paid off your school loans or your school debt. Was it in 2 years, 3 years?
It was in a very short time frame. I will be honest with you guys. When I left school probably in 2009, and I was a sophomore going into junior year. And so when I left school, I had about maybe $13,000-$14,000 worth of student loan debt. So a lot of times people, when I say my student loans have been paid off, they automatically assume I have $40,000 or $50,000, and I most definitely don't want to discredit myself in any way, shape, or form. But those same principles that I use to help me pay off my student loans, it's the same principles that you can use to pay off your student loans. It just will take, you know, a little bit longer, not extremely long, but if you keep your head down, you know, you can make it happen. So what I did was, at the time I had a part-time business with a direct sales company, and instead of making the money and, you know, of course, essentially spending it on whatever I wanted to, my wife and I, we figured out a way to live on less, if that makes sense. So she had a job at the time. I was working my job, and the extra income that was coming from my my business on the side, you know, we used that extra money to, you know, to pay down, well, pay off my student loans. And then I thought I did the math. I was bringing in around an extra $1,000 a month with that company, and that helped out tremendously. And so I owed about $13,000-$14,000 at the time. So I said, man, if I keep paying this off, I'll be done in about 13 months. And after about 3 or 4 months went by, I said, you know, I wonder if they would, you know, because I'm in sales, so we negotiate all the time. I said, I wonder if I can negotiate away instead of, you know, at the time I think my balance was around like 9,000 or something. And I called them. I said, listen, is there any way possible? I believe I had a bonus coming in from the direct sales company. And I said, well, I'm going to have my hands on about $5,000 liquid cash. And I wanted to know, instead of doing something crazy with this money, can I just, you know, just pay this stuff off? Like we just do a settlement, right? And here I am thinking, this is a government entity. They don't negotiate, you know, student loan settlements and things of that sort. And sure enough, she says, listen, if you pay us 52 something and some change, we can just wash away the difference. I said, are you serious? And she says, absolutely. I said, well, listen, here's my account number. Here's my route number. And sure enough, they took it off. They took it out the account. And before, it felt weird because I was like, man, I'm student loan free. And now granted that that same concept would help me so much. A lot of times people, their situation similar to mine, they have student loans, right? But then, of course, they have their job. And then the normal person, they're paying monthly payments if they can afford to do so. And they're thinking to themselves, this is almost impossible. So right there, one of the wealth principles, you have to bring in, you have to have another stream of income. You don't have to be a full-time entrepreneur, but you have to find a way to bring in another stream of income. I know people that are great at what they do at their jobs and such, you know, but they braid hair or they're landscapers on the side or they're barbers on the side. It's okay to have another stream of income to start knocking some of this stuff out. Otherwise, it's going to bring a lot of stress. And I think that's what's happening to the new generation. The old generation didn't have to worry about that because school was so cheap. You could literally work full-time and put yourself through school. Now it's difficult. So a lot of people, they look good on Facebook, they look good on Instagram, but I see the credit reports, and it's difficult. So take a part of my story and say, you know what, okay, I think it's time for me to create another stream of income. So that's how I was able to pay off my student loans.
That's beautiful. So let's go right into credit. Let's start there. Then we'll get to building wealth, and then we'll talk about what we should do with our tax returns. So credit, what is it? How is it maintained? How does it go up? How does it go down?
All right. So
why is it important as well?
You got it. Well, okay. So let's start off with why it's important. That's where we set the foundation. Credit is important simply because it is how financial institutions can kind of grade a person. I say grade a person because children have, if you hear someone say this, I promise you it came from me. This is nowhere else. I made this up. Children have report cards, and adults have credit reports, okay? And so it's the adult report card. It is on paper, your payment, your credibility on paying your bills in a timely fashion. And what I've seen so much so is that people don't quite understand how credit works because, again, they were never taught credit. Now, granted, people, we don't know what we don't know, but at the same time, now in 2016, the information is at our fingertips, literally on our phones. So the reason why credit is so important is because people need to know if they can trust you. And then now you have apartments, because there are some people, and I've met them. They say, oh, no, I don't need credit. I pay everything in cash. And you know what? That is absolutely great. But let's be honest. If you save up all of your money, and you one day save up enough to purchase a home, what is the likelihood that your children will be able to do that? What is the likelihood that you could teach someone else to do that? And another thing, too, you would have to exhaust all of your funds. So the thing about it is that there is, just because you have debt does not mean it's bad debt. I'm going to go into an example later of the difference between good debt and bad debt, okay? But either way, like now, you can't even rent. You can't get an apartment. You can't get a rental car. You know, sometimes some jobs, they don't look at your score, but they look at your credit report just to differentiate if you're a good person or not, because everybody's got a bachelor's degree. A bachelor's degree is like a high school diploma now. So they want to know, what are you are you paying your bills? Because they can determine, you know, if this person has good intentions or not. That's how strong that number is, you know. So now this is pretty much, credit is really simple. Sometimes we complicate it, but it's because it's a matter of really short, simple things. The easiest way to explain credit is just pay your bills on time. That's honestly it. If you pay your bills on time, you should be fine. Now, if your credit's not the best right now, it could be a lot of different factors. It could be because of bills you didn't pay on time in the past, which is great because all you got to do is just start paying bills right now. You know, so it could be because of bankruptcies, child support. It could be, you know, a lot of different factors can decrease your credit score. You know, so to improve it, the easiest way to do it is just start being on time with things. And credit takes time. It's not overnight. I mean, my clients, when they work directly with me and I can see the report and tell them exactly what they need to do in exactly what order, my clients average 25 to 30 points a month increase. You know, and you guys can look this up on my website, gosimplypro.com/testimonials. But you guys can see that. But in the general public, the easiest way I can explain it is simply paying your bills on time and not using your credit cards as much. But again, some people are doing those things, and their score is still not where it needs to be. And there's a few tweaks that we have to do. But it's tough to kind of give a full lecture on it because everyone's situation is different. And I would hate for me to say, hey, open a credit card, and this person already has 6 credit cards. I would hate to say, hey, you know, do this, and they do it, and their score goes down. So it's just every situation is going to be different. But one thing I know for sure that will help you is, you know, paying your bills on time and keeping your balances low. That's the main goal. That is the main thing.
All right, Calvin. So let's say I'm looking at my credit report. You're looking at my credit report. And I have things on there that I need to pay. What do I pay first to build my credit quicker?
All right. So now here's the deal. And Dave Ramsey, in his book, Total Money Makeover, this came from his book, Financial Peace. It was one of his first financial books that he wrote. And this will actually lay the foundation for the Total Money Makeover. And in that book, he talked about the debt snowball. And in the debt snowball, he says, listen, if you're going to start paying your debts, you want to start doing it from smallest to largest. Some people say go from the one that has the most interest to the least interest. But honestly, guys, most people that have debt are in the hundreds of dollars. It's usually not in the thousands, like, you know, for separate accounts. Even if it is in the thousands, it's just, you know, again, the reason why I recommend go smallest to largest, for example, if you got a collection, you got debt, it's like maybe $50, $60, and you got another piece of debt, it's like $600, you feel more accomplished as you start taking these baby steps towards, you know, reducing your debt, if you're able to start knocking out a lot of these small items. You know, for example, I saw one person, she had about $2,000 worth of debt. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, she had about $2,000 worth of debt, and she had about 3 or 4 collections that was like maybe a couple hundred dollars a piece or whatever. And one big item that was maybe about $1,400, and she came across about $1,500. So what did she do? She paid out the $1,400, right? And I said, well, that's a no, but I would have recommended you pay the small ones first. She said, if I pay off the big one, won't that affect my score more? Not at all. If you have a $50 collection, you know, and you have, let's say, a $500 collection, paying them off, they're equally the same weight on your credit report. A lot of people don't know that. They quickly assume that because the more money that they owe actually has a bigger impact on their credit report, and that's not the case. So I recommend going small to largest because these start to feel better. You have 5 items on your report, and you're able to knock out 4 of them, and you'll have 1 more left versus, you know, paying off the big one, right, and then having 4 more left. It doesn't make sense to do so, especially when they all have the equal value on your credit report. And it looks better. It's a better look, you know. So when we go into wealth building a little bit later, I'll be able to show you guys how I was able to buy my first home, at the age of 25, and I had a repossession on my credit report. You want to know why they approved it for my first home with a repossession? Because they don't care about that repossession. You know, so there are some things that banks don't care about, right? Is that, wait a minute, Calvin, what sense does that make? You promised to pay somebody, you didn't pay somebody, right? And then, of course, you finally paid them, but you still had the repossession in court. And then they gave you a loan for a home? Absolutely. You know why? Because it was old. Things change. People make mistakes. You know, everybody makes crazy financial mistakes, you know, when they're younger and when they're in college and such, you know. So, but either way, we'll go into that part a little bit later, but I recommend starting off small and then focusing on the big items later.
All right. So I'm paying off the debts I have on my credit, things outside of that that will help me rebuild my credit. And what is a good credit score?
Well, it really all depends. I'm glad you brought this up because a lot of people want to know what exactly is a good credit score. Okay, the higher score you go, the lower the interest you're going to pay. So essentially, you want to always pay the lowest interest possible. But see, here's the catch. Here's the catch. If you have a credit card, that card is going to have an interest rate, and everything the credit score is doing brackets. So every financial product is going to have different interest rates based on the score. So to be in the safe zone is anything above like 720. 700 is like the entry level. But like when you get to like 720, you're going to notice your mail is going to start to change. You're going to start seeing the credit card offers in thicker paper. It's going to be all glossy. You know, you're going to get all type of phone calls and emails and mail, and that's because you are credit worthy. And they know, listen, we want you to represent our company because we know you're going to pay stuff on time. One of my clients said, you know, you've made it when American Express starts sending you mail. So that is one way to look at it. You'll notice, you know, over time. I say about 720 is a good score to have. Now, here's the deal. If you're not there, there are a couple different things that you can do. Again, paying the bills on time, it sounds like something so simple, but you'll be surprised how many people have no idea who's reporting to their credit report. People's Gas has been reporting to people's credit reports for a very long time, and they don't know it. You know, so if you have People's Gas right now, you know, the chances are they're reporting to your credit report. And come this summer, FICO is launching. FICO is a FICO score, 90% of lenders use the FICO scoring method, okay? And FICO is an abbreviation for Fair Isaac Incorporation. That's a company, of course, that makes the FICO score. They're coming out with a new version called the XD. So X is an X-ray, D is in dog, okay? And the FICO XD is essentially there to help a lot of people that may not have the best credit. But the problem is that it's a two-way street. They're going to allow utility companies and phone companies to now report payment history to the consumer's credit report. But at the same time, if a person is late on those obligations, it's actually going to put them in a worse position, right? Because I know people that are late on their utilities all the time, but they got a decent credit score. So people are going to be more apt to pay things on time, and that's where the utility company, they said, listen, people are late on us, you know, all the time because it's not on their credit report. And then there are some things that people don't even know that's not on their credit report. For example, if you have a cell phone bill and you like with Sprint, T-Mobile, whatever, that's not going to be on your credit report. A lot of people think that it is. Now, it's going to be on your credit report if you leave that company and you owe them money, or if you leave a bank. Like with a checking account, you overdraw and then you leave the bank. Those become collections. You know, so that's a different structure of being in your credit report. So as long as you're paying your bills on time, you know, you should be fine. And then, of course, credit card usage. Now, a lot of people see things online, you know, for 30% usage, right? You know, but if you're under – what I tell my clients is stay under 10%. You know, if your limit is, you know, 500, stay under 50. Just so you know, you don't have to carry a balance to build credit. So, for example, if you have a credit card, I don't care about the limit, you don't have to buy something. I'm sorry. You can buy something every month. I'm not saying that you should or you shouldn't. The thing about it is that some people feel like they should max the card out and then pay on it every month. That's not what you want to do. You know, people always say gas and groceries. That's okay, but don't force yourself. What I tell people to do, pay a bill every single month, right? pay, like, you know, your cell phone bills, you know, $100 or something like that. You know, try to see if it's under, like, you know, 30% is the golden rule, or maybe like a gym membership. You know, you can pay like a gym membership every single month, you know, and that way you don't have to, you know, you're going to have the money, right? And then that way, you know, you're not looking for something to buy just a quote unquote deal credit. I even had, there's a good friend of mine, he has phenomenal credit. And his mom told him, you know, just carry a little balance every month. And this is what he told me. And he has no idea the amount of people I've helped buy homes, buy cars, and improve their credit scores. He has no idea, right? This is an older guy. And I'm like, here he is. Here his mom is. They have phenomenal credit, and they're giving bad advice. But he knows to pay his bills on time. So after a long period of time of doing that, you can easily get to the 800s, you know, but at the same time, he's saying that you have to carry a balance. Now, right now, the FICO XD, which comes out this summer, and this is not something you guys got to remember, but this is technically the 10th version since FICO has been giving out credit scores in 1983. So what does that mean? That means that a lot of times people give it information, but it's outdated, okay? Because the FICO algorithm has changed because the economy's changed. People's buying habits have changed. So you're talking, you know, people have been complaining for years. Hey, listen, I paid these bills on time. Why is it not on my credit report? And look how long it took them. So a lot of times the rules of the game have changed, and people may be giving you bad advice. They may not mean to, but it's not in the industry. So those are simple things that you will definitely want to do. Now, again, everyone's situation is different. Some people, I can tell them, I said, listen, you got to close this account out, things of that sort. You know, so the best way is to have a credit coach actually walk you through it. Now, there are some people I talk to, they say, well, I can just do it on my own. You absolutely can. These are things, building credit is something that you can most definitely do on your own. It's trial and error. But when you deal with a credit coach, they can look exactly at your report and tell you exactly what you need to do and tell you exactly what type of results to expect in a certain period of time, because we've seen so many different scenarios. And I hear people say things like, well, should I get a trade line? Here's the deal. A trade line is a line of credit, or pretty much when you're pretty much being an authorized user on an account that you do not control. Why would you give up your personal information and have it so vulnerable and hope that this account gets paid on time? That doesn't make any sense to me. So some people do that. Some people make a living selling other people's good credit accounts. I recommend you do not do that. Let me ask you a question. If you jump on a trade line, right, you don't control it. If that person has phenomenal credit, right, they pay the bill every single month, but they die. I know it's heavy. But let's say they stop paying the bill, right? If they stop paying the bill, did you know as an authorized user, you can't remove yourself off of that account? Guess what? The account holder has to do that. So what if they file bankruptcy, or they have a divorce? What if they have a huge medical bill? You are exposed to that. You have no idea what can happen. What if they have identity theft on that account? Someone steals that credit card or steals have access to that. They max that out. They're trying to fix that situation, and you can't even remove yourself from there. Then what? But people do it all the time. And then the second reason why you shouldn't do it, because it costs money. Why on God's green earth would you pay $200, $300, $400, $500? I've seen trade lines as high as $500, $600, and they're paying to be on somebody else's account. You can get a secured credit card for $200 and build your own credit. Why? Because a trade line is simply an item on your credit report that builds credit, but can also tear down credit. Another thing, a trade line is any account. So a credit card, yes, is a trade line. An auto loan, yes, is a trade line. A personal loan, you got it, ding, 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 a trade line. On my website, GoSimplePro.com/blog, B-L-O-G, I have a lot of different resources on how to build credit with a credit card, how to get a credit card with bad credit, how to build credit without a credit card. So I have all of those scenarios. For example, there's a company, I forgot the name of it, it's not on the top of my head, but I just wrote an article about it, and they're pretty much like Amazon, and they let you have They let you have an account with them, and they give you credit. Like, they give you like $100 or maybe $200, and you can buy, they have normal products, and that Beats headphones, whatever, and you use that, right? and you pay that back. There's a little interest on there, just like a credit card would be, right? But again, it's technically not a credit card. It's just like, you know, a department store credit, right? And you pay that back, and they report all of your payments to the credit bureau. That's one way you can do it. So there's a lot of different ways that you guys can do it. Also, one way you could do it is everyone has that grandparent, that aunt, that uncle, somebody in their family, or it could be a brother, sister, mom, whoever, that pays their bills because you know people that got good credit. You know who they are. And you can ask them to add you on as an authorized user to their credit report. Now, granted, this is very similar to being on a trade line, but this is something you have a little bit more control of. Why? They're a phone call away. This is somebody who's a text message away. This is someone you know that's not using their credit card a lot. I had a client who was on her mom's credit card, right? But so were the rest of her brothers and sisters. The credit card was at 80%. So this whole time she was thinking that it was helping her score. It wasn't. It was actually decreasing her credit score because it was pretty much maxed out for the past 5 years, right? And she had no idea. And I said, listen, you need to tell that person to remove yourself from this account. So these are little things that you guys can do. And by the way, it costs you nothing. It costs you nothing to ask, you know, a family member or a friend or whoever, can they put you on, you know, as an authorized user for 3 months, 6 months, whatever, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But this is somebody, again, that you got that's a phone call away, a text message away, and if something hits the fan, you got to have them say, listen, can you remove me off of this? Because you have a little bit more control in a situation like that. So those are a few ways, you know, to kind of help, you know, improve your score.
All right. So we've built our credit. Now we want to work on building our wealth. What are some principles to wealth? What are some things we should be looking for? And in that answer, what are some misconceptions? So I know you can handle
gotcha.
All of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. First, I do want to say I do not know all. I am on the road to wealth myself. But what I've realized with wealth, number one, you have to know that it's an ongoing learning process. There are so many ways to accomplish wealth. And that will take time. And that doesn't mean it will be forever. You know, but you have to understand that the number one key to wealth is to have money coming in without your efforts. Okay? Now, not 100% of you not being there, but money coming in without you having to do anything. There's one book that I believe that kind of probably introduced wealth to everybody that I know. And, of course, some people read a different book or got introduced to something, whatever, that led them to the conversation of wealth. But the first book that got me to was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Okay, it's a New York Times bestseller, and in the book it talks about I forgot what it's called, the quadrant. And in the quadrant he talks about being an employee, being a small business owner, being a big business owner, and then being an investor. And
now,
he talked about
Mr. Russell. Hey,
I'm sorry. How about now? Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, sorry about that. My phone was in my pocket. So, but yeah, in that he talked about the Q quadrant. That's the by the way, I haven't read this book in like, oh my God, since 2007. But I remember the principle. And in that book, he has a quadrant, and it talks about being an employee, being a small business owner, being a big business owner, and then being an investor. Now, he says that people that are employees and that are small business owners, you're essentially working every single day, right? And it's nothing wrong with being a small business owner, but a lot of times being a small business owner, you know, you pretty much own the job, right? Instead of working the job, you own the job itself. That does not mean that you can't transition to a big business or become an investor. That does not mean that. It just says that, you know, that's where everybody starts. I mean, everybody starts in small business or, you know, as an employee, which is okay. But the transition where wealth starts to come in is when you realize that when you have other people or other assets that are making you money. So the number one thing that you have to know is that it is an ongoing learning process. So what do you do? This is where you network, you read, you learn from people. You know who people are that are wealthy, not the ones that flash on Instagram or nothing like that. I'm not saying that they can't do that. I'm talking about the ones where you know where things are different. They present themselves differently. They look at stock. They look at the stock market. They're into real estate. And these are things that, you know, it doesn't have to be those two. It could be a lot of different, you know, variables into that, you know. So let's say, for example, you want to start learning wealth, like, as soon as possible. So, again, the first thing to understand is a learning process, right? The second thing is that you got to start reading some books, okay? Now, you don't have to start reading every single book and then start going into action, but you read as you go. A great app that I just downloaded is Audible. Now, Audible, after my free trial, is going to be like $15 a month, right? So you have to invest in yourself. So I buy a book a month anyway. I used to be a paperback guy, but now with Audible, I don't see myself doing that again. I mean, I don't have nothing against it, but because I used to pay, you know, get a $10 or $12 book, takes about $3 or $4 shipping, and it's about the same because I have a book club on Facebook called The Vital Few. That's V-I-T-A-L, The Vital Few. And we have a book every single month. And this month is the Richest Man in Babylon, which is the second book. So the first one is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And the second book you must read is The Richest Man in Babylon. And it sets the principles for wealth. I'm not going to give you the principles, right? You got to read it for yourself, but it's a great book. But in that book, it lays the foundation. It kind of gives the old version of what Rich Dad, Poor Dad talks about. But my road to wealth, I believe, for me, that's best for me, is real estate. And let me explain why. Real estate is just like someone who is a barber or a landscaper, right? With a barber, they know you're going to come every single, you know, 2 weeks or so because your hair is going to grow. The same thing with a landscaper as their grass grows, right? So in real estate, people are going to have a place to stay, all right? So everyone's not going to own a home, and if they do, that's fine. But what we do know is that there's more renters than there are homeowners, okay? So now here's the deal. You have to take advantage of that market. In where we live, me and Minty are actually fortunate enough to live in Illinois where there are, you know, multifamily units. Now, in some places, there's not, you know, as many multifamily units. So when me and my wife were looking for our first home, we had to make a tough decision. We had to decide if we were going to look for a single-family home, which is great, right? Nothing wrong with that, or a multifamily unit. Now, here's the difference between a multifamily unit and a single-family home. A single-family home is just like pretty much paying rent, you know, except you're paying a mortgage company. And then for doing that for 30 years, they give you the deed, you have the title, just like having a title to the car, and you now own the home. You do whatever you want to do with it, right? There's a difference. That home does not make you any money. That's why when they say, is it an asset, yeah, you own the home, yes, it has value, but at the same time, you can only make money if you have equity inside the home. For example, if your home is worth $150 and, you know, you've been paying on it for a while, and it's worth $150 and you owe, you know, $125. So now you have $25,000 worth of equity, right? Everyone doesn't have that, and you won't have it until you sell it. Versus having an income property or a two-flat building, right, a multi-family unit, let's break the numbers down. I'm going to use easy numbers. Let's say, for example, that you have a two-unit building. You live on the first floor. Your tenant lives on the second floor or whatever. It doesn't matter. The mortgage on the building is $1,000, right? But the person that lives on the second floor, you charge them $1,000 to stay there. Now you put yourself in a wealth position. Here's why. You have options now. Option one, you can either take the money from the tenant and pay the mortgage. Now you have no living expense. By the way, what's a person's largest expense? Their living expense. So imagine if you could save $600 a month, $800 a month, $1,000 a month, $1,500 a month because you now have no living expense. That's option one. Option two, you can take that money and you can put it towards the mortgage, just like option one, but you can also still pay a living expense to the mortgage company. So instead of most mortgages are normally around 30 years because they have, you know, that's how you get the lowest payment possible, but some people do 15 years. Either way, if you double up on the mortgage, then you can turn a 30-year mortgage to a 15-year mortgage or a 15-year mortgage to a 7-year mortgage, right, 7.5-year mortgage. Wouldn't that be awesome? That's option two. Or you can do option three. Option three is you can use the tenant, you know, money, and you pay the mortgage, like option one and two, but you save up your living expense, you save up all of it for a certain period of time. And then you can just either just store it away or you can buy another building, right? This is actually something that me and two of my business partners are working on right now. And it's how to buy an income property before you're 30 years old. I bought my first income property at 25. My other friend bought his at 24 or 25, I can't remember. And then my other friend, he bought his at 27, I believe. And we all bought income properties. Then, guess what? 3 years later, to the date, within a week from each other, we all closed on our second property. So we said, you know what? Why don't we just buy a property every 3 to 5 years? Here's why. Because let's talk about wealth building retirement, right? Most people have a 401k, okay, which is just a glorified savings plan, something with low risk, something that you really can't control, right? And if you touch it, you get a penalty. That sucks, right? So with real estate, let's go back to that example with the two-unit building. You live on the first floor, you stay you have a tenant on the second floor, right? After 30 years, even if you stay in that building, you still have $12,000, which is $1,000 a month, from the tenant coming to you every single month. So that's something that's realistic. Now, let's say you live in a four-unit building, right? And you pay off the mortgage, and then after 30 years, you now have $36,000, that's $3,000 a month times 12, that's $36,000 a year, you know, now coming in. This is how people are building wealth. Why? Because it's not something you have to do. Do you have to maintain the property? Yeah, you got to maintain the property, but the money is coming in, you know, which most properties really need to be maintained like that. You cut the grass, you put some money to the side if something breaks down, things will break down. You know, I had a water heater go out at one of my buildings, and that cost about $800. But I have money put to the side of that because, you know, you take maybe $50, maybe $100, and you put it away every single month, you know, for when things happen, because they will happen. You know, you would hate to be paying rent at a place, and something happens, and the landlord stops paying, and you have to deal with that. That's horrible, okay? So that's what I believe the best way to do wealth building. So, for example, this is my plan, to buy a building every 3 to 5 years. So I'm 28 years old right now, okay? Right now I have two properties, okay? And I'm not bragging or boasting, but let's just say I'm 30, right? Make the numbers easy. And I keep doing this, and I do it every 5 years, right? So at 35, that's my third property. At 40, that's my fourth property. At 45, that's my fifth property. At 50, that's my sixth property. You guys get where I'm going? Now, say, well, Calvin, if all these mortgages have 30 years or 15 years, what if the loans outlive you? That's fine, because at the end of the day, the mortgages will cover themselves. The tenants will cover the mortgage. Everything else is just extra income. So but at some point, it will reach those 30 years or 15 years, whatever they decide to get paid off. All right? At that point, guess what Dad has built for the family? He's built wealth. He's built money coming in without no one having to work. And then you build an empire. I show my son the exact same thing. I don't care what my son does. If he wants to be a doctor, if he wants to work for the city, if he wants to, clean gutters out for a living, he will have properties. Why? Because, one, I'm going to show him so he'll understand how wealth works. Because that way, when it comes to retirement, you don't want to be at Lowe's. You don't want to be working at Walmart. You don't want to be working at the local grocery store. They've taken all the jobs. Things are going backwards. They told us to go to school because they went to school, and now they're back in taking the jobs that we're trying to take because we're trying to pay for school. And everybody's working for the same corporations. Think about how you live your daily life. In your daily life, you wake up, you get on your iPhone, a product that came from an idea from a gentleman who didn't finish college, right? And then you go on there and you check the number one checked app, you know, in all of history, and that's Facebook, another company that you support that, you know, from a college dropout. And then if your phone dies and you can't check it there, guess what? You hop on your laptop or your desktop that now has Windows, another company that's supported by another college dropout. So what do? They have hired all of the people that, you know, that are so quote-unquote smart, and I'm not in college. The thing about it is that, again, we have to understand how wealth goes. It doesn't matter what kind of degree you have. It doesn't matter what grades you had in school. What matters is how much money is coming in without you being the smart one? How much money is coming in without you going to work? How much money is coming in without you being Michael Jordan, right? You know, you could be the best person at your job. But here's the deal, is that once you stop working, that money stops coming in. And you got to know that, whether you're making $10 an hour, $100,000 a year, or $1 million a year. You have to know that once you stop working, that the money stops flowing in the exact same way. You may have Aflac. Money may come in or whatever if you're sick at work or whatever, but you need something that's going to come in regardless because people are going to need somewhere to stay. Then you have a little Calvin, the stock market, right? What's wrong with the stock market? There's nothing wrong with the stock market. The problem is that I cannot control stocks. Again, not bragging, but I was lucky enough to actually get in on Facebook when it was $17 a share. Here's an update. Facebook's at $125 a share. So, again, that's not the only company I invested in. I lost money in some other company, right? But here's my thing is that with the stock market, I cannot control that investment. It's all luck. It's all a hunch. You have no idea what these companies are going to do. Right off the back of your mind, what's the most successful restaurant in American history? McDonald's. McDonald's is not stock. It's not at an all-time high. It's at a regular, like, normal stock. Right? Then you would think that people making millions of dollars. Those millions have already been made in the early 2000s, okay? But real estate, you can control that investment. I'll give you an example. If you have a home and, you know, you walk inside the home and there's carpet on the floor, you may get people that's going to be interested in buying the home. You may get people that's going to buy the home. But if you got hardwood floors, an upgrade on the floor, right, then people are going to, oh, my God, I got to have those hardwood floors. Now, carpet and hardwood floors may be a little more difficult, all right, to make a decision between. But let's go into a standard, you know, white refrigerator, black refrigerator, or stainless steel. Let's go into laminate countertops or granite countertops. Let's go into no garage versus a garage. So the more things you put inside this house, you increase the value of your investment. Versus a stock, how can you increase the value of the stock? There's nothing you can do. You are held hostage. You are literally crossing your fingers, biting your nails, and checking it every single day. So that's how I learned it. So the person said, okay, how can I get started in entry-level wealth building through real estate? Now you can watch videos. You can go to different seminars. Or you just keep it real simple. If you have a 620 credit score through FICO, right, and which you can easily check through myfico.com, or you can go to my website, gosimplypro.com, and you can actually buy the three bureau. You don't have to go through my site to do it, but their FICO has so many products. People buy the wrong product, right? And on my site on the right-hand side, you'll see where that product is. It's gosimplypro.com. And it'll let you know what your mortgage score is. If your mortgage score is a 620, you qualify for an FHA loan. If you qualify for an FHA loan, you can get up to 4 units on that FHA loan. So if you, let's say you get a 4-unit building, right, the mortgage is, let's say, $2,000. So it's you and three other people. If that mortgage is $2,000 and you have three people paying, you know, I'll keep the numbers here. Let's say it's $2,000 and you have you and you have three tenants in there. And those three tenants are paying $1,000 a piece. Now you have $3,000. So you're paying the mortgage, which is $2,000. So now you're making $1,000 a month, right? And then 30 years later, or 15, however you decide to do it, when that mortgage is paid off, you now have $36,000 coming in regardless of if you work or not. Now let's just do the math. If you're already at your job making $18 an hour and you're ready to retire, and this is what you were already making, and that comes up to $36,000 a year, you leave your job. Now you're retired. That money is still coming in. So now your lifestyle didn't change. Now you're at home. You're saying, wait a minute. What if while I'm working, I can save that money and buy multiple buildings? That's what wealthy people do. They figure out a way to have money come in without them working. And that's how you build wealth.
So in talking about that, let's talk about investments. How do you start investments and how important are investments?
Okay, now, technically, anything can be an investment. You have to stand behind something. Even if you don't like it, it's going to grow with or without you. And you just have to decide if you're going to get on the front end of it. A lot of people are looking at companies like Tesla, A lot of people looking at medical marijuana. And whatever your position is on electrical vehicles or, you know, marijuana or whatever, or just anything, Netflix, LinkedIn, these are hot companies. I know they have been the last 24 months, I should say. But you can easily invest in those stocks. They also have mutual funds. Well, mutual funds are, again, low risk, you know, because you can actually invest. If you have a 401k with your job, a lot of people don't even know. They don't even log into their back office, not the, you know, like the account part of their 401k. They just kind of just put money into random things. That's what you're doing. It's honestly a crapshoot because you don't know what it is. A mutual fund is a fund that majority of people put their money into, and it's a group of stocks and bonds, and in hopes that the company does well. If the company does well, they share the pennies with you because that's what they are. It's pennies, and the pennies add up, right, because it's low risk. But, again, if you want a bigger payout, you got to go a little bit higher risk, and that's where real estate comes in. That's where here's another thing. This is something that a lot of people are doing that they're not even, like, really pushing because there's really no industry for it. Everyone knows that person that's really good at something, like they're a graphic designer or they're an artist, a music artist, they're an actor, or they write scripts or whatever, and they need the money to fly around and push the movie script. They need the money for studio time and concerts and clothes, and they need the money to do all types of things, right, to support their vision. That's what they call venture capitalists. Now, venture capitalists are people that give away millions of dollars to companies in hopes of that they'll become the next Google, the next Facebook, the next Instagram, right? And you could invest in things like that. Now, granted, this is on the entry level. I'm not talking about a GoFundMe. That's just legally giving away money, right? But I see people do GoFundMe all the time for great causes. I had a friend of mine. She's a phenomenal singer, and she did a GoFundMe. She raised like $3,000. I would have never given, like, for example, I'm not saying don't support the person on GoFundMe, but I would have written her a contract saying, listen, I'm going to give you $500. You make it big. I want 5% of what you bring in. Okay? Because remember, that's just getting started. This could be the next Beyonce. This could be the next Aretha Franklin. You don't know. But you know this, is that you have a contract. She has a subcontract before she signs with the music label that you're already entitled to 5% because they helped you along the way. There are a lot of people that did things like that. Like, we know about, you know, I'm a huge Drake fan. So we know about, you know, of course, you know, OVO. We know about Young Money. We know about Cash Money. We know about Universal Music. But in all of that, you know, you have a lot of people that are not on the stage, a lot of people that are behind the scenes that were investors early on in that that's reaping the benefits. Now, there's so many things that you can invest into. There are some people that are into starting businesses. And, you know, when they want to start a business, it costs them $20,000. And this is where you see things like on Shark Tank. They say, hey, listen, I need $100,000. And you say, well, wait a minute, hold on. I ain't got $100,000, but I got about $2,000 saved up. I want to own about 3% of your company. And they're going to say, absolutely, because granted, I would not be here if it wasn't for you. So I'll give you an example. This is a true story. There's a gentleman who had about $10,000 saved, and, you know, he thought about starting a business. He went to the grocery store, and they had, you know, groceries. And in the grocery store, they had, like, you know, clothes. And in the clothes, they had, like, you know, lingerie. And so he says, you know what? I'm going to buy something sexy for my wife. And he buys, you know, a piece of lingerie. He says, man, I feel kind of awkward. You know, it's almost like buying, you know, tampons or, you know, any other women products or whatever at the grocery store, right? And he says, I feel awkward buying lingerie, you know, for my wife. And the lady says, don't feel awkward. You know, you should be okay about it. And sure enough, he says, you know, I'm going to start a business where people, you know, men can go in, and if they want to, they can buy lingerie for women. And his wife's name was Victoria. And here's the thing about it. He needed an additional $10,000. So he had 10. He needed another $10,000. You guys already see where I'm going with this story. He needed another $10,000. But he didn't want his wife to know about it. So he asked his friends. He asked relatives. And he also borrowed some money from a bank. And everything, he got the money for the $10,000, and his wife, Victoria, had no idea, which is why he named the store Victoria's Secret. So now, what I don't know, though, a lot of his friends that did the early investing, now that that did the early investing, they own a percentage of Victoria's Secret. This is a true story, by the way. And they own a percentage of that company. And the reason being is because they say, listen, man, if this goes big, you know, hey, I want in. You know, and those are, so there are a lot of investments. And this is where if you look up the game called cash flow, okay, that's cash and then flow. In the game cash flow, the whole object of the game, everyone's a rat. And everyone's trying to get out the rat race. And the rat race is a circle. And in the circle, every other spot is an opportunity. There are so many things you can invest in. You don't have to have thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. Some people need $20. You can make a mini investment. You can charge interest. If someone calls you and say, hey, listen, I need to borrow $20. Now, you can turn that from you know, them paying you back $20, and you can turn that into an investment. Say, listen, if I give you $20, I want $30 when you pay me back. Okay, cool, man, I got you. That was an investment. So there are a lot of different types of investments. It's just a matter of just thinking differently, you know? And so, you know, just kind of like having an idea like that. But, again, I say on the ground floor, real estate may seem like it's big, but I promise you it's so achievable. But look, when these people are doing, like, GoFundMes and stuff like that, and they're trying to do it for a cause, not something that's, like, you know, nonprofit, they're like, listen, help me get such and such started. Help me get my business started. Own a percentage of that. You could be a smaller version of Shark Tank. You don't have to have millions. You can have hundreds of dollars and own 1% or 2% of the profits. And if you got that in contract, you can have it where every single month you look at her growth, that their gross profits, and you say, listen, how much money did you make? I made this amount of money. Perfect. I want my 1% because you signed that contract. This is an investment. They don't have no problem doing that, especially in the beginning, because they're not to say that people don't know what they don't know. But, well, that's true. But not to say that people are not going to want to support you or say, no, I don't want to do that. And that might happen too. But, again, at the beginning of time, they're just trying to get the money. They're like, listen, if you support me, I appreciate that. You know, so I can go on about different types of stories and things of that sort. But look out. I'm telling you, there are investments everywhere.
So, Calvin, I want to thank you. What I'd like to do, since we are pressed for time, we have a few minutes left, and we didn't get to talk about filing taxes and actually what to do with tax money. What are some of the wisest things to do? I want to invite you back in a few weeks, maybe a week or two, cover that topic in and of itself, just do an addendum to the show. You cool with that?
Absolutely. Again, I'm not the best at taxes, but I've learned a lot of different things based on last year's tax rules and prior to. And the reason why I say that is because we're just starting this year off, and I have no idea what changes, you know, the IRS is going to be making. But I would love to give whatever insight I do have, because there's more ways to have a nice tax refund than filing somebody else's child, okay? There are legitimate ways. Let me tell you something. Just so you know, I don't care what your position is, you know, in politics or presidency or whatever. I didn't vote for Trump or nothing like that. I want to put that out there. Not that I know it's a big deal or not. But there's, in one of the presidential debates, he mentioned, a lot of people were upset about, is that they said, well, you didn't pay federal taxes, I think Hillary Clinton said. He says, because I'm smart. You notice he never went back to that, right? You know why he said that? Because, see, technically, everybody pays taxes. Even he pays taxes. But he positions himself to where he doesn't have to owe any money. He positions himself to where he breaks even. That's the difference. And that's the difference between going to H&R Block and Jackson Hewitt versus going to a CPA. I just wrote an article on this on my website, GoSwimmingPro.com, and it talks about the top three ways to file your taxes in 2017. You know, a lot of you don't even know that Credit Karma started doing taxes. Guess what the price is on that? Free. And you'll know more about that if you go to my site. You know, I'm not just trying to promote my site or anything like that, but there's a lot of free information that's out there if you have questions and we didn't get a chance to touch on certain different topics. So I'd be more than happy to come back and speak on those topics.
Right. Well, Calvin, I appreciate you. You already pubbed your site and everything. Anything else you want to say before we close out?
No, man, that's it, man. I appreciate everyone for taking out their time. I know we're going into the late hours. If you guys are lucky, he recorded this call. This is the entry-level stuff that we're doing. And but man, I'm telling you, I with my clients, I walk them through every single step. It's more than just improving your score. I have clients that just got their first mortgage approval. I mean, they're making huge moves, and they don't do anything without consulting with me and my team. And that's what we're here for. This is the beginning of, you know, of a movement. This is the beginning of Black Wall Street. I'm telling you, it's one step at a time, and we're helping everybody because it costs us nothing to do so.
Exactly. I want to thank you for coming on, Calvin. get in contact with Calvin. He's a very intelligent brother. He knows what he's talking about. He will put mumps in your pocket. He will show you how to do it for yourself. So listen to a replay of the show. You can go to MentaliqueShaw.com. You can go to BlogTalkRadio.com or to my Twitter, which is Twitter/MentaliqueShaw. Until the next time, we will see you. Kyle, thanks, man.